stocks, bonds, ETFs, straight out of downtown Chicago. This is Zach's Market Edge.
Welcome to Zach's Market Edge, the podcast about investing in your life. I'm your host, Tracy Reinick, and this week I'm joined by Zach's chief equity strategist and the editor of The Large Cap Trader, John Blank, to talk about one of our favorite topics, which is travel. And how can you invest in travel with everything going on right now? Some of the stuff happening in Europe, a lot of the refugee issue, things happening in the U.S. with the Trump administration. Should you be in the travel stocks, or, you know, is there opportunity there? So John just got back from a vacation in Mexico, and I did as well. So we thought we'd kind of start with what we saw there. We were actually on opposite sides of Mexico, of that country, on our trips. John, you were in the Baja, is that right?
I was in the Baja, yeah.
Yeah, and you went for the gray whales, right, down there?
Right. I did. I went down to the lagoons on the Pacific side to see the gray whale birthing and that whole process.
Okay, I went to Playa del Carmen on the Caribbean side on the Yucatan Peninsula, but I've been down there numerous times, so I've kind of seen it over the years and like what's gone on and how popular or not popular it is. And then you've been down to see the gray whales and stuff before too, right?
I hadn't seen the gray whales before. This
okay.
was number one. The first time I've ever driven the Baja.
Okay.
I jumped on the grenade and drove down.
Okay. But you've been to the Baja, I know, numerous times.
I have, but what I'll tell you is that it's an entirely different experience to drive across the border and through the eight military checkpoints.
I bet.
The lagoons.
Yeah.
It's totally eye-opening about the, in many ways, about the status of Mexico.
Yeah. So let's talk about, you were mentioning to me about the number of tourists that were on this expedition to see the gray whales. You know, you get in the boats and you go out there, and it seems like it wasn't as crowded as what it should have been. Is that right?
That's absolutely true, Tracy. I booked this. You know, I was looking to do it 3 years ago, and I started booking it in November, and I barely got in back then, only because I was on my own, and only because I moved my dates around to the middle of February, which is the peak of when all this whale birthing and calving happens. It makes for all the excitement. So when I went there into this setup with 14 different sets of accommodations, I expected it to be packed with probably 50 people, you know, three or four in each accommodation. And dinner, at the most, was 10 people one day, and most days it was 6 to 8 people.
Wow. So,
and that was because huge package tours from Europe, all with different excuses, one after the other, different excuses, canceled. They didn't come out and say it was the politics of the United States, but they all had a reason to not come.
So it was the Europeans who weren't going, not the Americans.
Right. It was the European tours, and if you had 30 people coming over and they all canceled once, then the whole thing was empty. So it was just these huge package tours. And I think that, you know, I've read recently too with Turkey, you know, with the unrest in Turkey and Erdogan, there's a huge drop off in Turkish travel from Europe, because as soon as something people hear about negative politics or turbulence, they just stay away. They don't know what's going on. It doesn't matter. They just don't want to go.
Yeah, I went on the Playa side. It seemed as crowded as ever. This is kind of the peak time down there. It's a little bit before the spring break when all the kids get off, not the college kids, but the younger kids. So I missed that, but a lot of the college students were down there, and there seemed to be as many of the foreign tourists as normal. They get a large contingent from the UK and Spain and even France there. And I heard them speaking around the resort I was at. But I went into town for dinner once, and I was talking to this restaurateur who actually happened to be from Chicago. And he's been down there running his little restaurant for like 5 or 6 years at least. And so we were just kind of chatting. And I asked him, you know, how is business? Is anything that's happening politically with what the Trump administration is saying or doing, you know, impacting his business or what's happening in Playa del Carmen in particular? And he brushed it off and told me, no. But then I told him your story about what happened with the gray whales and the cancellations there. And then he suddenly told me basically the truth and said that, yes, the business basically crashed in January, but from Americans, he said they were not coming down in January, rebounded a little bit in February, and then again in March, but it was still a little slower than normal. And so it wasn't the Europeans over there that weren't coming, it was the Americans. And I said, well, why are the Americans choosing not to come? And he felt it was because they're afraid of some kind of retaliation because of relationships that are going on between Mexico and the U.S. But, you know, I obviously didn't see anything like that when I was down there. It was, you know, in the tourist areas, anyone who has the money and who's coming there to spend their money, they're, you know, generally happy about that. Like, they want you to come and spend there. And that creates their jobs and all of that. So I didn't experience anything like that. I just know that, you know, with the peso so weak, the U.S. dollar goes so far down there. It's almost kind of stunning. It's literally 50% off right now.
Yeah, you know, in the Baja, no one reported this up here, but there was a day where there was a human chain of Mexicans. They put a human wall. They held hands, basically, for miles down there and as protest to the wall. And I did stay one night in the Valle de Guadalupe wine area just south of the border on my way down, and the owner was full-on Mexican, and he was distressed, as all could be. He was not happy, and he basically, his line was, I can't see us putting up with this the whole 4 years if it's like this. It's this intense.
Yeah.
And at that point, you know, the tweets were really intense, and the negativity was really intense. I think some of the fever has broken.
Right.
And the peso has come back as part of
it
that.
Has.
And,
yeah.
And so, again, we don't know if that was the bottom that he was calling.
Right. I don't know. We'll
and
see.
And that's the question you have to ask here is you know, when does the objectives of the administration become a little more focused on a longer-term objective and less about, you know, honoring the promises of the election campaign itself?
So let's talk a little bit about what's going to happen to U.S. tourism, not so much what's going to happen in, you know, say, Mexico or all that, but because, you know, New York City tourism officials have already said that they will see a reduction in about 300,000 tourists just this year due to fears about, you know, flying in through the airports. You know, just like that, people in other countries, the Europeans or, you know, Chinese or wherever, are deciding not to come and spend their money in the U.S. now. And I saw an article in the L.A. Times that was talking about a Canadian tour group that apparently every spring they offer tours to New York City to go see, you know, the Liberty, Statue of Liberty and Rockefeller Center and all that stuff for when the kids are on their breaks. It's like family tours. And they usually bring down 200 to 300 people. And this year, only 11 have signed up. So they're just choosing. The Canadians are like, we have money. We're doing pretty well ourselves right now, and we're not going to go to America. We're going to go somewhere else. So I think this is going to be like a bigger issue for U.S. tourism, that we're going to get hit by people not coming in.
Here's a scenario. I'll quote this. During the decade following the 9/11 attacks, the U.S. share of total overseas travel fell by nearly one-third, a loss of some 68 million visitors that cost the travel industry $500 billion over that decade. That was $50 billion a year. This time around, direct and indirect costs, the scenarios are at least $35 billion annually, which includes travel, tourism, and education, and potentially as high as $71
billion. Wow. That's a lot of jobs, because I saw something that just said $10 billion, which seems low now, and that was just 90,000 jobs. So if we're talking $50 to $70 billion, I mean, it's a couple hundred thousand jobs. It's equivalent to what we lost in the energy downturn, basically.
So, yeah, well, if you think about it, in a $16 trillion economy, this amounts to something like 0.5% of GDP.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty substantial.
And I would say, actually, the Q1 2017 numbers, where we're coming in at a early preliminary rate of 1.2 on the GDP, is probably accurate. I mean, there's probably 0.3 of a loss in spending, whether it's airplanes or hotels or whatever.
Right.
It's already showing up.
So that brings us to the next question with the stocks. Do I want to be in any of, like, you know, what I consider the travel stocks? And that is a wide variety. There's a lot of stocks that could be grouped within travel. Do I want to be in any right now? But because my feeling is I do want to be in them, because even if again, if the tourists, the Canadians, or let's just say the Brits aren't going to come to the U.S. and spend their money here because they don't want to deal with going through our airports and whatever else, they're going to go somewhere because they want to go on vacation. And right now, the global economy is doing pretty well and people have spending money. So, and even Americans want to go, you know, somewhere and the dollar's strong. So they're going to be going, you know, over to Europe or Mexico or wherever. So I still feel like the travel stocks are somewhere you want to be right now.
Well, I agree, Tracy. I mean, the hardest thing about thinking about the political overlay is that it is what it is. It's an overlay. And the underpinnings of all of this domestically and just the sheer state of the economy being so strong globally in the U.S., the overlay may be nothing more than a veneer on and a small reduction on an otherwise pretty positive story. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you have to go if you're a bull.
Yeah, because it seems to me like the time you would not want to be in the travel stocks obviously is in a recession, because that's when I'm not going to go on that vacation. And, you know, I'm doing the staycation or whatever. Remember that? The staycations? That seems so long ago now, where nobody left. They would just like stay at home and go, you know, eat out or go to their local hotel or whatever if they could afford that, because no one dared to spend the money. So, and since we don't seem to have right now any recessionary signals, I feel, you know, we still do want to travel, and maybe even more so we might want to travel right now just to escape all the headlines and everything, just to get away.
Yeah, no, that's it. And I think the other thing we got to think about is the metamorphosis of this will change over time. I mean, it's just impossible to know how the ins and outs, you know, whether people just, you know, it's like ski resorts, you know, it's 1 year, it's everyone goes to the beach, the next year it's the skiing resort that's interesting. And this is very hard with this overlay, whether, you know, all of a sudden people get positive because he's moderating, or all people want to go traveling because he's got more negative.
I mean, right.
There's a million ways to cast the stone.
Right.
Or not cast the stone.
Yeah. So let's talk about a few stocks. I have some of my favorites and some that I own in my own personal portfolio. So one of the big juggernauts right now in travel obviously has to be Priceline. They keep hitting new all-time highs. They are expected to see double-digit earnings growth this year of 13%. That's a little under what they've done in the past couple years, though. And next year, 2018, rebounding to about 17%. They're trading around 23 times, so they're not exactly a value stock. Yes, I know. I get this question all the time. People are like, Tracy, you own it, but it's not a value. Sometimes I do buy growth, and I feel like Priceline is still the growth. And they also own a chunk of Ctrip. I don't know if anyone remembers this. I tweeted with someone about this a couple weeks ago, but they've been buying chunks of Ctrip just to have an ownership in the Chinese, their Chinese equivalent to Priceline. And so they own a chunk of that, and that's been doing well. So I still like Priceline, even though it's hitting these new highs. If it pulls back any, I would be interested. And I know this is one that it's trading at like almost $1,800 a share. I wish they would split it. That's one of the issues I think people have in buying it. Like, who can afford that?
Yeah, well, the price earnings growth rate is 1.32, which is not out of line.
No, yeah.
And that's what they're doing is they're doing the Apple thing, which is they are keeping the stock pricey because they want to be institutional, not retail, right?
That's who's buying that one. So if you want a similar kind of company, there's always that isn't trading at $1,800. There's always Expedia, which I like a lot. I don't own this one, but I have used it for many years. They're actually Zacks rank 5 right now, which isn't good. But they do have the real strong earnings growth this year, 22%. Next year, 37%. They're still crushing it too. And people are, you know, it used to be like you were kind of scared to buy like a package on Expedia because something always went wrong, or like the hotel like lost your reservation or something. That always used to happen. But now that seems to have, they've fixed that. They've gotten better customer service or whatever. And they have some real good deals with a lot of the airlines and stuff to make those packages. So I, even though it's a 5, if those estimates start turning around, I still like Expedia in the same kind of space along with Priceline.
Yeah, price earnings growth ratio Expedia 1.38, which is not on the line. I would say the chart, though, is, you know, you're at 127 a share, which,
I know.
It was only 110 earlier this year. It's already gone up.
I know. That's why on some of these, I feel like, people might want to wait for a pullback if we get one here, you know, then
yeah, I would think.
Yeah, it's going to get a little more attractive. What do you think about the airline stocks? Because that's in this area, and they've surged, and now they're kind of pulling back a little bit on this winter storm that's out east. They canceled thousands of flights, so everyone's kind of panicking, selling their airline shares. But then, like, Southwest also kind of warned on what's happening with them because of California. They said they had a lot of trouble getting their flights out of there because of all your rainstorms, John. So you don't normally hear that, an airline saying, like, oh, we had bad weather in California, so it's going to hurt our quarter. But what do you think about the airlines in general? Like Southwest, you know, it's off its highs and it's trading around 14 times.
Well, tell you what, I've just pulled up American's chart. And,
yeah.
You know, to our earlier conversation about pessimism, the price of the stock was $46 in 2017, and it's now at $42.
Yeah.
And it's a value stock with an A rating because of its very, very low forward earnings of 9.
Right, PE, right.
9 PE. So, and then the sector rank is 15 out of 16. It's at the very bottom.
Right.
So this is what we're talking about, that this is where, then the question is, do you buy the lows here and the pessimism and it bounces, right?
Right. I don't know. I still, you know, Buffett's bought into all these airline stocks. So I feel like there must be something going on there that he's a believer in this sector.
Yeah, you know, I own Intercontinental Airlines, IACGY, for the large cap trader. And what I've learned is the Middle Eastern and European and Asian air travel was record highs in January. It was North American air travel that fell off, but nowhere else.
Wow. Well, yeah, that's
what it
really
was. I mean, again, we're doing real well on Intercontinental Airlines because it's Europe and the economy is doing well there. And it's back to your point about an alternative. Go somewhere else. You can't go to the United States.
Right.
So where do I go? Go to Spain. Go to, you know, wherever.
Right. So, yeah, I still feel like the travel area is good.
I do think you either got to buy the dip or I think, you know, my view on something like an American is if you got enough time here, you're probably going to win, make some money on it if you bought it now.
Yeah. What do you think about like the timeshare type stocks? Some of those have been soaring. It's like I own Marriott Vacations and the Value Investor, and I've owned it for a while now, over a year. And, you know, they're not as cheap as they used to be, but a lot of people thought the timeshare companies would be doomed because of Airbnb and various other things. Like, why would I need to buy a timeshare now? But strangely enough, again, like if the global economy is doing well, people have extra money to spend and they will buy timeshares. Like it's like a given for some reason. Like even with Airbnb being out there, they will still invest in buying, you know, a place where they can go like every year or, you know, for 2 weeks out of the year or whatever it is. And so they've been having record earnings at Marriott Vacations, which is ticker is VAC. So I don't know, like you wouldn't think this would be an area you'd want to be in either, but it does show the strength of the global economy, I feel.
Well, the other thing it has, Teresi, these Marriott type plays is that you have, you know, when you have disposable income and discretionary income, it's cheaper than buying an actual home. So it's kind of a mixture of the real estate overvaluation and a way to circumvent timesharing. I mean, like when I look into getting a timeshare in Mexico, I could go to the Baja for a month every year. I think, well, it's just cheaper.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that's what they're playing into.
The value of it is that as discretionary incomes rise, it's more approachable to millions of people. And it's usually, you know, that broad market that has the most appeal, not the million-dollar home in Bora Bora.
Right, right. Although that would be nice.
Well, that would be nice, yeah.
That's a place I want to go to. I need to be looking around there, see what's going on there. So I guess our consensus is we still do like the travel stocks, despite all the kind of noise in the background and the uncertainty.
Yeah, I would say that, and I would also say that you know, looking for an opening position in the U.S. airlines, I wouldn't be rushing in right now. I'd be watching for a real nice opener in the next few months.
Okay. And maybe look at those international airlines instead.
Right. And the international airlines, particularly the European ones, I think there's a lot of money to be made in that area of the world. You get the euro is really low. the economies are really stronger for the first time in years, and that ebullience and plus the substitution away from being going to the U.S. it's all good for particularly Asian groups. If I can go to Florence over New York, I'm taking it.
Sure. Yeah, me too. Okay, so let me just recap our stocks here. We talked about Priceline, which its ticker is PCLN. Expedia is EXPE. We mentioned Southwest Airlines, which is LUV. American, aren't they AAL still? Is that their ticker?
Yeah, they are.
So,
they are.
Yeah, AAL. Okay. And then we have Intercontinental, you mentioned, which is IACGY. Is that right?
Right.
Okay. And we talked about Marriott Vacations, VAC. There's a lot of other names we didn't cover in there. There's a lot of the hotel chains. There's also the cruise liners. Some of them are doing well. So there's a lot of places you could be in this space. And I'm sure there's an ETF for travel. There must be. I didn't actually ask Eric that, but I'm sure there might be. If there isn't, someone should invent one. So there's definitely various ways to be in this group, but we probably will be revisiting this, you know, maybe towards the end of the year to kind of see where things fall out and shake out. But as long as the global economy is doing well, people will be traveling. So thanks, John. Thanks for checking in. I need to have you back on again, too, to talk about that recession thing again, because I know we've covered it in the past, but we haven't talked about it in 2017. Everybody's complacent right now.
Yeah, I hear you. That we do need to do a once-a-year thing about whether there's a recession. It's kind of one of those annual things.
Yeah, so maybe we'll talk about that the next time I have you on. So from all of us here, you can, of course, check out any of our former podcasts. John and I actually did one that you all hated that was on Mexico and Colombia. I keep bringing it up. It's from last year, but it's definitely worth going back and listening to that one now. Because some of the stocks and some of the stuff we talked about in that one, that old podcast, have actually done pretty well. So you can check out any of our old podcasts on iTunes, of course. And I do suggest going to iTunes because SoundCloud is still a little bit iffy over there. They're still in business, though, so you can still check us out on SoundCloud as well. So either of those places or, of course, on Zacks.com. And so for everyone here, I'll see you again next time.